So there's this sutta in the canon, which I can't remember where it was, but it goes the narrative goes a little bit like there's these. Well, the Buddha is walking through the woods from one location to another, and as they near a town, some girls, giggling or whatever, run by and hide. And a few minutes later, some young boys who are running after them, trying to find the girls, stumble across the Buddha and his attendant, and they, not knowing where the girls are, they ask the Buddha, can you tell us where the girls went? And the Buddha, never one to turn down an opportunity to throw in a little spiritual ping, says, a little spiritual gotcha, says, wouldn't it be better to find yourself than to find the girls? You're a young... They probably were like, what the fuck? Can't these spiritual guys just give us a straight answer? Like, it's a theme that's very, very dominant throughout the Buddha's teachings, which is that we are set up to search for the answers to everything outside of ourselves. From the time we're infants, when there's hunger, or there's coldness, or there's loneliness, or there's fear, we cry, and the answers that settle us down internally come from outside. We're given food or comfort or a blanket or whatever. So there's this tendency to what the Buddha called asava, sabasava, asava, to flow out, to look around us, to people and relationships, for approval, for things in the world to make us feel better, no matter what arises in the body, what states of unease and fear and discomfort and loneliness and confusion. We look for the answer to make it go away out there. Of course, unlike hunger or being cold or being tired, which can be very easily met externally, many of the internal discomforts, the feelings that arise in us that don't feel very good, the feelings of unease, of emptiness, cannot be answered externally. Very often, in fact, the Buddha's concept of avijja, of the root ignorance that starts us on all of the unnecessary suffering in our lives, starts from this very core misunderstanding that whenever we feel discomfort or uneasy or there's something wrong or something amiss, this looking externally for something to make it go away. This is what leads to addictions, what leads to short-term solutions that cause more suffering in our lives, which leads to serial, undertakings, jumping from one relationship to another, or constantly looking for the next friend or the next spiritual book that will have all the answers, the next piece of clothes, or the next meal, or the next something that will fill me up and make me feel safe, and make me feel complete, and make me feel happy, and make me feel worthwhile. So this this tendency to flow outwards, looking for something that will solve everything, that will be the easy answer to my life. You know, I feel confused. I feel like I don't have the rule book. I feel like I'm uneasy around other people. I'm uneasy in my own skin. I'm uneasy. I feel financial insecurity. What can I grab onto, latch onto? Where's the solution? So when we do this, the first, obviously the first problem is that we attach to things. We get baited and hooked by things that we believe will be the answer or a large part of the answer. And when we get baited by these worldly winds, when we attach to the sense of, oh, you know, if I really do well at this job, this will give me a purpose, this will give me security, this will give me lasting happiness, this will give me a reason for being, or if I have a baby, that will be the solution, or if I get a relationship, that will be, if only I was in a relationship, or if only I got a better job, or if only I had a bigger apartment, or better friends, or more Facebook friends. Fuck the real friends, just give me the Facebook friends. And, if only I had this or that. So we get blown about, because when we attach to the feeling of, oh, this is great, the approval that we get at jobs and friendships, then when we don't get approval, when we get disapproval, it sucks. We get blown back. When we attach to financials and owning things, when we attach to gain, then when we lose, or when things, when the market turns bad, or when the economy turns bad, or when jobs go away, when our things aren't as shiny and new, then we feel like we have less. We get blown back. So there's that. When we attach to conditional externals to make us feel better, when we really attach to them, as opposed to just appreciating them, but really wanting something external to fix us or make us feel secure or give us a real reason for being, then we get blown about. We get pushed around. But there's another drawback to flowing out that's even more as I deepen my practice over the decades, that I've become more and more focused on in my awareness, which is that the more the mind flows out, constantly hypervigilantly reading other people's glances and trying to figure out where I stand with other people and what's going on and what's happening here and what's going on with that drama, the more I flow out, the smaller and smaller my feeling of, for lack of a better term, self. The Buddha actually uses the term citta, which means where we locate our awareness. And when we are flowing out into the world looking for solutions, our sense of where we are, where our subjective sense of where our consciousness is, gets smaller and smaller and smaller until it just seems that we're just right behind our eyes. That's where I am. I'm just a little person right behind my eyeballs. There's a little person in a seat there behind the eyeballs, very small, and he's got a lot of controls, and he's moving my body. He's moving my eyeballs. It's this consciousness shrinks and shrinks and shrinks. And as Joyce said about one of his characters in The Dubliners, he said that this character lived a few feet away from his body. And we all, in a sense, do that. We're all hovering just ahead of our, and our body's trying to catch up to us as we're walking around. We're like, oh, what's that person doing? And, oh, she's attractive, and, oh, I don't like the looks of that person. So, and our consciousness is ahead of us, and we're trying to keep up with it. And like consciousness looks at our body, it's like, oh, this thing, I have to, it gets tired, and I have to feed that thing, and it, I have to, I have to let it get to sleep, and I have to give it sex, and I have to keep it in clothing, and it, you know, and all, and it repays me by getting older and cranky. And we don't realize that actually it's the other way around. It's the body that's keeping us alive. It's the body that's doing all the hard work. It's the body that's maintaining consciousness, but not only is it maintaining us, as a wonderful neuroscientists like Antonio Damasio and Joseph Ledoux and Eagleman wrote wonderful Incognito. Much of the information that we make decisions based on comes from the body. Generally what happens is the unconscious, it doesn't talk to us directly. The unconscious part of the brain and the amygdala, hippocampus, when it knows something is wrong, or when it thinks something is a good idea, it tenses or relaxes the muscles. And we read unconsciously the body tensing and relaxing, and that's what the Buddha called Vedana. That's how we get our gut impulses, our gut influences that play a large part in our decision making. There's actually this study that Damasio did where he presented people with two decks of cards. And he'd have people choose which deck to pull each card from. And the objective, he told them, was to figure out which deck was filled with better cards. The decks were very similar, but one deck had slightly better cards. So they randomly choose until they could figure out which deck was slightly better. So it took people on average 26 cards before they could figure out which deck was better. But halfway into that process, about 13 cards in, the body knew the answer. The body was already tensing with the wrong deck and releasing with the right deck. It took us 13 more cards, though, to read the body. And they found that people who meditate were able to quicker figure out because they were better at reading their bodies. They could use more information. The notion or the key is that when we shrink our awareness by constantly flowing our attention out into the world, our sense of self shrinks and shrinks and shrinks until we feel very small. Very, very tiny. We feel very vulnerable. We feel very, very contained. When I feel this tiny, because I'm so out, judge, you know, attached to how you're regarding me, trying to figure out what you're thinking about me, trying to figure out what's happening with the people at work, trying to figure out what's going to happen with this unresolved issue. When I'm flowing out of my body awareness, my awareness of feelings, when I'm abandoning all this and going out into the world, my sense of the subjective becomes smaller and smaller and smaller until I'm the size of a pea floating around all these thoughts behind my eyes. And that's it. That's my entire internal experience. And the world seems much more threatening, and you seem much more threatening, because I am very, very, very small and fragile and vulnerable. So the Buddha offered a bunch of different tools to counter this tendency to look externally for the answers to everything and to rebalance our awareness so that we have an anchor. So that not only are we not pushed around by the world, but also our sense of where we are, how we locate ourselves, how big we feel, how secure we feel, expands. Always it starts with becoming aware of the body. The more the awareness becomes in touch with the sensations that are supporting us and are part of us, everything we are aware of is occurring in the mind. But the fact that we tend to associate with our thoughts and we tend to dissociate with the feelings of the body and our moods and our emotions is just an arbitrary thing that makes us feel smaller and more isolated and more alone. So the first step in breath practice is what the Buddha called to suffuse the awareness throughout the body using the breath. As we breathe in, to feel the awareness moving up through the body, as we breathe out, to feel the awareness flowing down. And to use this as a way to, one of my teachers, Ajahn Jeff, says, to knead our awareness through the body sensations. What happens when I do this is I feel much larger. I don't feel vulnerable, dependent on you. I don't feel thrown by you. I don't feel judged by you. I don't feel that I need as much from you, because I feel so much more grounded, so much more in touch with something larger. Often, spiritually, people think that the getting in touch with something larger is something out there, but that's not the way it works. The getting in touch with something larger starts within. It starts through the body. The body becomes the thing that makes us feel more aware. Then, the Buddha added on top of that, becoming aware of every changing state, including thoughts and moods and emotions that are changing. Just notice via yoniso manasikara. Notice how our inner state is flowing. Notice how moods are arising and passing. Notice how energy levels in the mind are changing. Notice how a sense of our feelings pushing us towards things and pushing us away from things are changing. We experience our internal landscape not only in terms of suffusing and moving up and through it, but also we look for change, any sense of change within, and we notice how there's this constant state of flux. There's new thoughts going beneath our awareness all the time. There are always moods happening. Sometimes we're frustrated. Sometimes there's a subtle sense of happiness or expectation. Sometimes there's suspense. What's going to happen next in life? Or when we're late, there's this sense of, So there's all these moods changing just beneath the level of our awareness. And the more we open our mind to what's these subtle changes in energy, these subtle changes in the expectations that we're bringing into each new interaction, all this richness that's happening inside of us, again, makes us feel bigger, more substantial. We're less, again, flooding out there, and we're more fascinated by this rich landscape within us. It's a rebalancing. None of this means that we just give up on paying attention to our jobs or being diligent in our relationships and our obligations. But there's a very substantial change that occurs when I'm monitoring and rebalancing my awareness so that as I interact with you, I have an awareness with, is there a resistance to you that's arising? Or before I even met with you, was there a sense of tension that might have nothing to do with you? And can I notice that and can I relax it? There are so many things that rehook the mind. As each of us leave the Dharmapunks and go out in the world, we're all going to be rehooked. Somebody's going to call us up. You have to get food, which means you're going to have to go through a supermarket. Are you going to have to find food to eat? You're going to have to walk by people. And you're going to have to find something to do with the rest of your evening, and there's going to be, you know, a new bill on your mailbox, and there's going to be, you know, a message on the phone, and there's going to be all this stuff. And the mind's going to want to flow out, and it's going to want to attach and say, oh, if only I got rid of this fucking student loan. If only I could get this person off my back. If only, you know, and once again, this, we get hooked. And what happens is there's this, the mind becomes entangled, which is the best word the Buddha used, but vijata, which means, enlightenment is described as vijata, which means to disentangle the mind. And the metaphor that's used is, we're like fishermen who are, I don't know what that means. It's like a rod. Imagine a fishing rod. I don't know what my thumbs are doing, but they're involved. So, and there's a line being cast. And as it stays in the water, you know, the water pushes it around and it gets caught up in seaweed and garbage and stuff. And pretty soon I think that garbage is a really big fish. And I'm tugging at it. And this is what happens with our awareness. We go out into the world. Somebody calls us up. Did you hear what blah, blah, blah happened at work? Can you believe? And blah, blah, blah. Just broke up with da, da, da. And yada, da. And, you know, Romney. And all this stuff. You're supposed to care. That's what the world is telling us. And, oh my God, and so I'm becoming entangled. So how do we disentangle the mind? Which the Buddha is the word the Buddha used to describe enlightenment is disentanglement. It's pulling back the awareness, which has been caught up in so many narratives and suspenses and unresolved issues, and, you know, how am I going to pay that bill, and what am I going to do with this summer, and should I stay in this relationship? And every time we get caught up in a drama, we're pushing our happiness and our peace a little further outside of ourselves, because the more our awareness is constantly caught up in these dramas, the less internal sense of stability and peace, the less of focus we can bring to relaxing the body, the less attention we can bring to maintaining ease within. So we always start this process not by, detachment never starts by saying, oh, forget it, forget this, forget that, I'm just going to focus. It's always a very, very real process of breathing, finding the breath, using the breath to suffuse us into the body again. There's no thinking about it, it's just doing it. And then there's a finding which, what are the moods, what are the feeling states? Is there a sense of unease or ease? How can I relax it? How can I invite the body to relax? What mood am I in? Can I acknowledge this mood? Can I use a sense of skillful reflections to bring about inner peace? Finally, the Buddha often talked about the Brahma Viharas as a way to rebalance the mind. The two biggest ways we get caught by the world is through love and hate. We fall in love, we meet Miss or Mr. Right.
Oh, so great. They really like the Butthole Surfers too. And they're vegan. This is amazing. I met a vegan Butthole Surfer. I'm so lucky. They'll fix everything. Let me just feast on them. Or then there's the opposite. That fucking asshole at work. If only I could get rid of that fucking asshole. Oh, it would be so great. Oh, if only that asshole wasn't there every fucking day. That asshole. I hate that person. Did you see what they were wearing today? They suck. And there's nothing that grabs hold of the mind and yanks it and entangles it and turns us into a tangled mess on love and hate. So the Brahma-viharas rebalance us. Rather than looking at other people as obstacles in our way, we simply greet people with an indiscriminate sense of, I hope this person is at peace. A sense of compassion when other beings are suffering. But it's always balanced with upekkha, which means we never allow any person to pull us into their dramas to the extent that we are not aware of what's going on within. We never get bent and pulled out of shape. We always maintain enough of a sense of inner awareness that we can maintain mindfulness throughout. So all of these practices, breath, awareness, yoniso manasikara, noticing change, Brahma-viharas, these are some of the many tools that the Buddha offered to keep the mind at home, or at least disentangled, so that we can live in the world, meet our obligations, but we're not cast about. We're not pushed around. When people have bad news, or when we hear somebody's been saying shit, or things are not going the way we want them to, we don't get tugged into the mire. There's some part of us that's always detached. And when we use the word detachment, we don't mean like, you know, Dr. Spock or whatever, you know, Mr. Spock. Is it doctor or mister?
No, mister.
Mr. Well, I made him a doctor. I gave him a doctorate. He is a doctor. All right, so he's both. He's Mr. Dr. Spock. Start a riot in a geek convention here. So we're detached. We're not like, oh, this is illogical, these emotions. But we're instead aware of the body, what's going on inside, so that we have there's more to us than just what's going on out there. So anyway, that's tonight's talk. Hope you got something from it. Now's your chance to ask any questions. Thank you for listening. And now, let me turn...